Hello, you're listening to a preview of a premium episode of Blocked and Reported. Katie, are you still recording?
Yes.
What are we talking about in this episode?
Fire. The fire and fire.
Actually, we are talking about fire in multiple senses. Yeah. We're talking about, you're going to hear us talk about some stuff, but the episode is largely about the chaos going on at Columbia University surrounding pro-Palestinian protests there. So if you want to hear the whole thing, go to blockedandreported.org where you can become a premium subscriber for just $5 a month and up. Enjoy the preview.
Hey, Jesse.
Katie.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, let's just leave that. I want people to see how the sausage gets made. Okay, at the
poorly.
Count of three.
It's not good sausage.
It is interruptive sausage. Katie, I have an idea that actually came to me in a dream.
Oh, really? You have dreams?
I have dreams. Oh. I'm capable of dreaming. Do you have dreams?
I do. I have very vivid dreams.
Weed with it.
Do you want to hear about my dream last night? I know there's nothing more interesting than hearing about people's
dreams. Yes, let's talk about your dream last night after I asked to talk about my dream. Let's do your dream first.
Okay, my dream was that I was flying with Moose as a service animal, and it did not go well. That was the dream.
Why didn't it go well? Did you crash the plane?
Nobody bought it.
Okay. That's so your dreams are extremely boring. Your dreams are as exciting as your life, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
My dream. So we are, I forget what we've announced or haven't announced, but we're hoping to link our Philadelphia conference appearance at Fire with some live events.
Oh, yeah, we're appearing at a conference at Fire.
I said that in the episode with PSA Sitch, and then I couldn't remember if we were allowed to announce it yet. And I think we haven't bothered to check when we're supposed to announce it, but we are keynoting the Fire conference.
We're keynoting? Wow.
Aren't we keynoting?
I don't know. Are we?
Huh. I think we're keynoting.
Let's check the website.
Keynoting.
We will be speaking at the conference. I'm not sure it's a keynote. But...
No, I think we're keynote. I think because we're appearing two nights.
Wow. God, we're important.
We're just so important. Anyway, we're also trying to do some live events in cities near Philly and maybe Philly if we can work it out, although we just hit a little roadblock, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I had a dream about an amazing format for a live event. We were doing a live event. You, me, we had a third person on stage with us.
Michael Hobbs.
Not Michael Hobbs. I think it was Helen Lewis. Whoever it was gave off like a Helen Lewis type vibe, but it was like in a dream. You can't tell for sure. The format was we had screens very close to us in front. So I guess we weren't facing the audience.
Perfect.
And we watched basketball.
I love it. Women's or men's?
And we mostly didn't talk. Men's, of course, the real one. We mostly didn't talk, but we occasionally commented on the basketball. And that was the live event. People paid to see us watch basketball and occasionally comment about it.
I am down with that. All right. So we've got the conference all plans. This is going to be a great keynote. If it is a keynote, I'm very excited about this. Did you watch the women's basketball tournament?
I did, from Utah with my brother, the last games. I was very entertained by it.
I watched them too. And I feel like I am something of a women's basketball expert now. And I think that I can say that the thing that would make women's basketball more interesting is if you lowered the hoop by 2 feet. No, not men. Yeah. Throw a couple trans women in there. I'm really like people think that this is a little bit offensive, I think. Like it's, you know, the bigotry of low expectations. But let's just lower the hoop. Why do they have a 10-foot goal? Why?
I mean, they're clearly capable of playing on a 10-foot hoop.
Sure, but that's not about capable. It's about entertaining. If it was on 8 feet, they could dunk.
I think it's there's like this sort of male feminist, like the women's game is as good, which is just so obviously not true. It is different. It was entertaining. What Caitlin Clark did was amazing, and it's interesting how much her game.
I thought she was overrated.
Really? What were your critiques of Caitlin Clark? I want to know what Katie Herzog thinks Caitlin Clark could have done better.
Defense.
Okay. Well,
I think she could have done a little bit of defense. Okay. She could have tried
that. She's out there. She's out there to be like a female Stephen Curry, and she did a good job.
Well, she could have. You know what? She could have tried to block a shot every once in a while. Just, you know what?
Isn't she very like not tall?
She's 6 feet. She's 6 feet.
This is the kind of analysis you'll get during her line. Couldn't this point guard have blocked more shots?
All right, we've been talking about this for 4 minutes. We have to stop before everybody turns off the episode.
We're going to talk about a few things on this premium episode. I have dog bit written near the top. This is about an article that I have to admit I haven't had a chance to read. You wanted to talk about, so why don't you do it?
Well, the good thing for you is that for our purposes, you don't need to have read the article. But this was an article in New York Magazine's The Cut. A woman wrote a piece about how she doesn't feel like New Yorkers respect dogs. And in fact, she thinks that New Yorkers are downright hostile to dogs. I'm going to ask you about that in a second. But the thing I wanted to bring attention to was a tweet in response to this. So someone, I don't know this person's name because all of the screenshots that I've seen have blacked out this person's identity to protect him, I suppose. He posted a screenshot from the article. And in that screenshot, this woman, this writer, is talking about these battles over Facebook. And the screenshot reads, Mia, who, like most people in this story, asked to use a pseudonym, recalls a post about dog waste evolving into a battle of your dog is gentrifying the neighborhood, you're a bad person for having one. Quote, are they saying that only white people have dogs? She, a Latina native New Yorker, wonders. The post got so heated that Mia's boyfriend left the group and later reapplied to get back in. And then so someone posted this. And this person's commentary was, looks like the cut and people more broadly are beginning to catch up to the idea that dogs in large cities are essentially settler colonial, a way for their owners to move into and occupy more of the urban space that they are allotted while making it everyone else's problem. I love this logic. I think it's great. And I think it also applies to children, does it not?
Yeah, children.
Talk about taking up more space.
Yeah.
Parents are settler colonialist.
This is bizarre. Part of the reason it's bizarre is, I would say, if you had to choose two American groups that most stereotypically have dogs, it is like poor blacks and poor whites.
Is that
like true? Like junkyard dog types, security dogs. I think so. Like true? Stereotypes? I think there's much more attention paid to like dog moms and stuff, but like dogs are huge in both inner cities and rural areas.
That is definitely true. We also have a lot of dogs in small towns. Their dogs are pretty much everywhere.
Dogs are everywhere. Everyone loves dog. America is probably one of the most pro-dog countries in the world.
Oh, yeah, totally. I talked about this with Sarah Hayter when I was on her show with Megan Daum. You know, Sarah is from is originally from Pakistan, and Megan and I are two, you know, childless dog lovers. And Sarah, I asked Sarah what her parents would think about these relationships with that Megan and I have with our dogs. And she said that her mother would be absolutely and probably rightfully just disgusted to know that.
I was at a dinner party the other night and there was a dog there, an amazing dog with a cute Russian name. And the owners were talking about how they took the dog on a tour of they did like a food tour of Queens, which has some of the best food in the world. Everyone loves this dog. It's the best dog ever. Sorry. It makes Moose look like an idiot, like a fucking moron.
Moose is an idiot, but that's part of his appeal.
I forgot to ask what breed. It has these like brown patches on like symmetrical brown patches and white and black and this sort of long
Australian Shepherd.
Smooth hair. Let me look it up. Australian Shepherd. I think it could have been an Australian Shepherd. I feel embarrassed I didn't ask.
That's a terrible dog to have in a city, but continue.
Because it's like a herding dog?
They're super high energy, like border collies.
Oh my God, this dog was vibrating with energy and was so happy to see everyone. They had to put it in a crate for a little while because it was too excited.
Yeah, you shouldn't have a dog like that in a city. Sorry, the people you're with need to be arrested. They actually are settler colonials.
This is someone you know.
Never mind then.
Yeah. but yeah, two things. One is just like, the hair everywhere. I still have hair on my clothes days later. Yeah. Like, I don't understand how people deal with that. I know
they get doodles. That's how you deal with it. You get a dog that has been genetically modified to not leave hair all over your body.
Yeah. The other thing was they took this dog on this long walk around Queens they did, and everyone loved the dog, except in the Bangladeshi neighborhood, people were terrified.
They wanted
of this
to eat
absolutely
it.
Adorable, well, that's racist, of this adorable dog, because there's this, it's like there was one hadith, you know, the hadith are these documents other than the Quran that said something negative about dogs, and then big swaths of the Muslim world hate dogs and are just scared of dogs. So like that's what Hayter was saying.
Oh, totally.
It's crazy.
And I think it's not just, of course, religion has a lot to do with it. The culture around animals is so interesting. This is what my dad studies. But there's also like rabies is still a very big problem in parts of Asia. So the idea of having dogs like sleep in your bed. So in a lot of the world, dogs are considered not just disgusting, but scary. And I do find it very interesting that there's so many, you know, cultural differences in the way that we treat our animals. Settler colonialism, dogs. Jesse, I wanted to ask your take on this, though. I know you didn't read the article. How much of a problem are dogs in your neighborhood? Like, are you constantly stepping on Shih Tzus when you leave the house or Shih Tzu shit?
The only animal I've stepped on in my time in New York is a rat. a live rat. This was either Vanderbilt or Washington. It was definitely not a pet rat. I am walking down the street one lovely, I think, spring night. I step on something squishy, and I'm like, God damn it, did I just step on a dead animal? No worries. It was a live animal.
Oh, good.
It was a live rat that subsequently scurried away behind me. Dogs. My neighborhood is like somewhat bougie. There's a lot of very cute, well-behaved dogs. There's a ton of them. Sometimes there's dogs.
Probably hypoallergenic ones.
Probably hypoallergenic, like gluten-free dogs. But no. I mean, there's loud dogs. There's barking dogs. But you live in a city. What do you expect?
Yeah. I mean, you would probably expect me to be the type of person who is like dog supremacy, get rid of the children, replace all of the kids' parks with dog parks. And I sort of am, but I also understand why people get annoyed with the coddling of the American dog, as I called my newsletter, because it is sort of like bringing dogs into restaurants. I find that that's disgusting. Don't do that. I think
are these emotional support dogs?
Well, that's not really a thing anymore. I mean, emotional support dogs. So I have done a lot of research into this because of my problem with, you know, having to drive across the country twice a year, a trip that I just finished last week again for the seventh time in the past 3 years to travel with my dog because I wisely bought a house 3,000 miles away from where I live, and to get to that house I have to fucking drive.
Yeah, can we just do a show just about your life choices the last few years at some point? Just like one show where we go through each one.
We talk about the van, we talk about the house, we talk about all of my unwise financial decisions. Let's not. Well, I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, I do, obviously I love dogs. Obviously I love Moose so much. It's actually a problem. Like I can actually cry on demand if I think about Moose dying in 20 years. It impacts my life.
20 years? Isn't it going to be way?
Yeah, 25.
Okay. Okay.
30? Okay, you think 30? Should we go for 30? But I understand where people are coming from because I've also lived in cities, and I don't live in a city anymore, but I do think that cities are really hard places to have dogs. And I've lived in apartment buildings where my neighbors have had dogs, and it can be very, very aggravating, you know, when you're at home and your neighbor's fucking dog is barking all the time. Or if there are off-leash dogs where you're trying to run or whatever. So I understand where people are coming from. But the idea that this is some sort of nefarious plot to colonize more area than we are entitled to, I think is very dumb and very funny.
Moving – this is one of my many struggles with a segue. Moving on from dogs to people who burn themselves alive and die.
Good one.
Let's talk about Max Azzarello, 37-year-old from St. Augustine, Florida. He burned himself alive outside the Manhattan courthouse where Donald Trump is on trial.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not hear about this.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you're too busy with your dogs and your vans. And
I mean, I assume he's protesting against the injustice being wrought on our former and possibly future president.
First of all, he is my president right now. Yeah, that'd be amazing if someone felt so strongly their political belief that you should be allowed to pay people to hush up your sexual affairs with them that you burned yourself alive. That would be real dedication. That does not appear to be what happened here. As the Times put it, Max Azzarello, quote, threw pamphlets into the air before dousing himself with an accelerant and setting his body ablaze. I accidentally watched a video of this, not knowing that's what I was going to watch. It does not look like a pleasant way to go.
What were the pamphlets for?
Well, we'll get to that. So overall, unless I'm forgetting something, Aaron Bushnell, the guy who went viral for doing the same thing outside the embassy of Israel in late February, this story seems notably different. He just had like a very sad end of his life. He was apparently this kind, smart kid with an interest in social justice. He did different kinds of work. He worked on the campaign of someone running for political office in Long Island. He worked in marketing, sales, and technology. Apparently, his mom dies in 2022. He has something of a downward spiral after that. During this spiral, he develops a belief system that the Times calls confusing and disjointed. It included the idea that the whole U.S. government, I guess, is some sort of fascist Ponzi scheme.
True.
He was also extremely anti-Bitcoin. Which...
Also true.
Fair enough. don't see any problems so far. He also acted quite erratically in public. Here's how the Times described what happened right after his recent stay in a psych ward. Days later, in picturesque St. Augustine, that's St. Augustine, Florida, where he's from, he went for dinner at the Casa Monica Hotel on Cordova Street. Afterward, Mr. Azzarello walked into the lobby, approached an autograph left by former President Bill Clinton, who had signed the wall several years earlier, and threw a glass of wine at it, the police say.
Oh, that's like the Extinction Rebellion protesters.
Exactly. It's all viral. He admitted what he had done to the officers, the police said. The episode was most likely written off as one man's bad night. 2 days later, he was back, standing outside the hotel in just his underwear, ranting and cursing into a bullhorn, the police said. And just 3 days after that, he vandalized a sign outside a nearby United Way office before climbing into the bed of a stranger's truck and rifling its comments. He also filed...
Contents.
He rifled through the comments section of the truck. He also filed some sort of nonsense lawsuit against the Clinton Foundation days before burning himself alive. We'll include a link to that. So yeah, he was troubled.
Okay, so did he ever lay out his political views anywhere?
Well, he had a Substack.
Oh god.
I know. It's so sad. It's called the Ponzi Papers. Here's how it's described. After Peter Thiel, I think he was pretty obsessed with Peter Thiel, started a bank run in March 2023, I think he's using the term we pretty liberally here, we did 1,500 hours of research and uncovered proof of a totalitarian con job that's been bleeding us dry since 1988 and will soon collapse the world economy.
Maybe it's his alters.
Yeah. Reading this guy's work is sort of a strange feeling because the writing itself is like perfectly solid. And I feel like usually when you read these manifestos, there's spelling mistakes and stuff. I'll just read one sentence that sort of captures the level of reasoning on display here. To better understand our form of government, I will point you to one of the most astonishing pieces of standalone evidence I've found. Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton's 1988 DNC speech where he nominated Mike Dukakis for president against George H.W. Bush. The speech is a vile, mean-spirited roast of Dukakis that makes no sense whatsoever. For Clinton to ruthlessly attack a member of his own party should have been political suicide, and he repeatedly mocks Dukakis's noble and earnest qualities. So there you have it.
So he was a pro-Michael Dukakis protester? The only one in history.
Which right away is a sign of mental illness right there. I believe Dukakis won Massachusetts and lost 49 other states when he ran for president. So yeah, he tried to squeeze a lot of his ideas into this pamphlet he threw into the air at the scene of the suicide. He posted this pamphlet or a link to it on his Substack. Katie, I'm just going to ask you to read one page of it, and then I'll explain why I'm asking you to read this.
In 1984, NYU alum Bernard Goetz shot four young black men on the subway who tried to rob him. He was heralded as the subway vigilante and helped fuel our racially charged culture wars. In 1989, NYU alum Spike Lee made the film Do the Right Thing, which told us just how racially divided and tribalized we are. In 2020, NYU alum Davina Singh made headlines for spitting in a cop's face during the George Floyd protest. NYU alum Sean Hannity and Rudy Giuliani.
You don't need to read the rest. He mentioned Sean Hannity, Rudy Giuliani, Chelsea Clinton.
Sean Hannity.
Yeah, that's what I call him. Okay. Chelsea Clinton, Whoopi Goldberg, Nancy Grace. Then he says, can you, and they're all saying divisive stuff. Quote, can you spot the common theme? These are all instances of criminal propaganda designed to divide the public against themselves so we don't realize that our government and media have been taken over by history's worst financial criminals whose only goals are to divide, deceive, and bleed us dry. So
it seems like the common theme here is NYU alum. I see it. What's NYU's big rival?
Do they have one? They don't really have sports.
Columbia?
There's this level of disjointedness and conspiracy theorizing that's really off the charts and suggests maybe something like schizophrenia. We can't tell for sure. Sometimes his rantings implicated like really powerful people like Peter Thiel, but you know, he's calling opinions criminal propaganda. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I just frankly think there's a pretty strong possibility that this kid is dead because of all the attention Aaron Bushnell got. Like, I'm speculating, but this is, I believe, how suicide contagion is theorized to work. This was a really troubled kid who really needed mental health care. Instead, he's floating around God knows where on the internet. He posted on Stupid Poll, apparently, and he develops this bizarre conspiracy theory. And I just think the Bushnell thing probably gave him like a way to go out in a blaze of glory. And there's no way to know that because like maybe he was just, some people sadly are just doomed to horrible mental health forever and are going to end up shot or otherwise dead. I'm not convinced. I think the way we treat things like high profile suicides has an impact. I think the folks who glorified Bushnell should realize this is the sort of thing that can happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, no way to know, obviously, if he was influenced by what Aaron Bushnell did. I do find it interesting that this one made... I hadn't heard about this. I mean, I haven't been that online because I have a rich and fulfilling life offline, unlike some people.
Okay. Okay, Katie.
But I do find that interesting. I mean, is it because was his story not viral because the cause, or was it because he seems more obviously crazy, or what do you think? Or just because it's like sloppy seconds? What do you think?
Yeah, you got to hate the self-immolation sloppy seconds. I mean, it got written up everywhere. I think it probably caught on less on Twitter because he's not a hero to some people because his belief system makes no sense. So I think it's as simple as that. And it's just the mental health is a bitch. And if you're not careful, you will hurt yourself. So I just found it quite sad. And I don't know. It just really bothered me viscerally seeing people celebrate the Bushnell thing because... A, I don't really... It's like, first of all, we talked about this, but it's like the lack of awareness is not the problem here, and you should just think about the effects you're helping to make something go viral might have on others.
Yeah, this whole thing is such a mess. Speaking of mental health, I've been reading Abigail Schreier's book. Have you read it?
Yeah, I thought it was quite good.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I'm struck by... So her book, it's called Bad Therapy, and it's really about children and like children being sucked into like the therapeutic industrial complex. But so much of it to me, I think would also apply to adults. And just hearing stories like this about people who are actually have an illness, people who are deeply mentally ill. And then reading this book about, you know, primarily kids in her case, but kids who are sent to therapy because they have testing anxiety and stuff like this. It just like the term mental health to me is almost too fucking broad at this point. Yeah. It just encompasses too much of a spectrum, some of which probably should not actually be resolved with things like therapy, and some of which probably can't be resolved with things like therapy because it's an actual brain disorder. And
yeah,
do they use talk therapy as a treatment for things like schizophrenia?
I think for severe schizophrenia, talk therapy doesn't do much. It might help you. I think you'd probably have Dr. Jesse here. You'd probably have. I could see you talking to the patient to help them come up with ways to manage hallucinations. I bet there's a part for it there, but it's not. No, schizophrenia is like we don't know this can happen. But it's just the fucking one of the worst mental illnesses you can have.
I was once diagnosed with bipolar 1 after about a 15.
That doesn't surprise me.
It was like after a 15 minute consult with a psychiatrist when I was in grad school. He prescribed me medication that I don't even remember what it was. I didn't take it. I'm not bipolar. I'm not bipolar 2. I'm not bipolar 1. I'm not bipolar.
I don't think your story's true. I've been reading a lot of Michael Hobbs tweets, and clinicians never prescribe medication for teenagers without doing a thorough, comprehensive assessment.
I wasn't a teenager. I was an adult.
Adults. You're a liar. Michael Hobbs says
sure,
you're a liar.
Sure, I'm a liar.
Okay,
isn't that crazy though? Like literally 15 minutes, and I got a diagnosis that is so obviously incorrect after 15 minutes, and I was prescribed medication. I like actual medication for this diagnosis.
Don't get me wrong; like you are clearly a very unwell person. But as far as I can tell,
but it's not bipolar 1.
No, you don't have any mental disorders that would prevent us from making money. Because if you did, I would demand you get them treated. What you do on your own time, I don't care. Yeah.
I'm too like lazy to be bipolar 1. They have like some fun mania. I don't have that.
It sounds exhausting, to be honest.
It does. Fun.
If there was
exhausting.
A way to just like experience one manic episode with no consequences, I would. It's like if you could do heroin once and how?
Take meth? A bunch of meth.
Yeah. Well, no, but I said no consequences.
I found out the other day, thanks to the New York Times crossword, that meth, there's an actual drug that is prescribed that is meth. It has like a brand name. I don't remember what it was, but you can get a prescription for meth. And I looked this up and it said like, what is it used to treat? And the answer was ADHD.
Gender dysphoria. Oh, God.
That just sounds like a great idea. You're having trouble concentrating in school, so you give people fucking literal meth.
No, Adderall's a stimulant.
I know.
And yet it helps people focus. Yeah,
I realize that, but I'm talking about actual meth. Methamphetamine, right. Not just Adderall, actual methamphetamine. Presumably not meth that's like cooked in a trailer somewhere, but actually in a lab.
Cool. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to talk about is the chaos unfolding up at Columbia University over Gaza war protesters. I woke up today, Monday the 22nd, to the news that things have gotten so bad up there that the university is actually going back to remote learning for the time being.
What? Yeah. They're going to give students more time? This seems like a bad idea. They don't need remote learning. They need class all the time, 24/7. If you don't go,
they hired an Israeli helicopter to dump coronavirus on the campus, and now they have to go back to it's welcome back to 2020. Everything sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I know that something is going on up there, but again, I have a rich and vibrant life offline, so I haven't really been paying attention. So, what's going on?
So, basically, obviously, a lot of college students have been protesting Gaza rather vociferously, and there have been dueling accusations of Islamophobia, anti-Semitism. But this particular brouhaha at Columbia comes down to a couple things. So remember we talked about this congressional testimony where college presidents were dragged to this committee and asked about anti-Semitism?
Oh, yeah. This eventually led to the resignation of Harvard president Claudine Gay.
Yes. Yeah. So they bring the presidents up. They ask them things like, is genocide talk free speech? The presidents were totally unprepared. Also, it's complicated because, like, in certain senses, genocide speak is free speech, although it depends on a private public campus, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there was another round of this. On Wednesday, Columbia's president, Nemat Manu Shafiq, had appeared before a congressional committee to talk about anti-Semitism on campus.
Okay. And what did they ask her about?
They just sort of put her through the ringer, to be honest. There have been some legitimate anti-Semitic incidents on the Columbia campus. They asked about those. They also asked about this professor, Joseph Massad, M-A-S-S-A-D, not that Massad. Dr. Massad said that the October 7th attacks were, and I quote, awesome.
He's just trying to escape that last name, which I understand. My last name is Herzog, president of Israel right now. Name is Herzog. Yeah. I get it.
That's it. That's all you get for your preview. If you want to hear the rest, go to blocktonreporter.org and sign up to become a preview. No, not a preview, a primo. Sign up to become a primo. Hope you enjoyed this preview.